On February 14th, Superintendent Stephen Fitzgerald became the head of the Wisconsin State Patrol. He walked right into Capitol protesters. He's had a very interesting few months, but it's time for a Newsmakers interview with Superintendent Stephen Fitzgerald of the State Patrol. Mr. Fitzgerald, thank you for agreeing to talk about your job and the events of the last few weeks, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
You have a long career in law enforcement. I started on the streets of Chicago. Can you talk about your background in law enforcement, sir?
Well, I started my career many years ago with the Chicago Police Department and was there for almost 10 years. And I look back now at that experience as one of the greatest apprenticeships that anybody could have served as far as law enforcement went, because during that time I saw and handled a lot of things that would take a lifetime to handle in some other area. My wife and I, although I love the job in Chicago, we're looking for a better place to raise our family. And I have been going on vacation in Dundee, Wisconsin all my life. My parents rented the same cottage for many years there. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I, when we got married, would go up to the cottage too. And I often said I would like to find a job in law enforcement here in Wisconsin. I was then hired by the village of Hustis Ford in Dodge County as their chief of police. And I literally went from a 13,000 person police department to a one person police department.
You were it?
I was it. Again, when I look back at my career, it was a defining moment, because I learned very quickly when I was in Chicago, if you arrested somebody, chances are you didn't know that person, and chances were very strong you'd never see that person again. When I got to Hustis Ford, I found out that not only did I know the person I was arresting, but I knew their whole family, and a lot of times even knew the family dog. And it gave me a real sense of how law enforcement has to be fair, how law enforcement has to evaluate what we do and the way we do things, because people are our commodity, and I learned that lesson very quickly there. I didn't only have to learn the people, I had to learn the ways of the people. And it was only 150 miles apart, but there was a big difference in the way lives were lived in a community of 789 people compared to what a large metropolitan area like Chicago was.
Your 10 years on the Chicago Police Force, you said that did include the 1968 Democratic Convention riots?
You're correct. I was a rookie in 1968, and the first challenge that we had was when Martin Luther King was assassinated.
Yes.
And there was serious rioting and looting and burning on the west side of the city that lasted for about 4 days, and I was involved in that melee. And after we recruit from that, then the Democratic Convention was the next big agenda, and I was detailed from my district to go down to the hotels down in the Gold Coast area where there was a lot of rioting and a lot of civil disturbance and unrest at that time. So, I was initiated pretty quick and got to, really evaluate and be involved in two major incidents.
The lessons learned in 1968 and the party convention riots, did you apply those to some of the massive protests here in the Capitol the last few months, sir?
It brought back a lot of memories, and it brought back a lot of, what I try to instill and always have is treat people with respect, and hopefully they'll treat you back with respect. And I think that was very evident the way that things were handled at the Capitol. There was a lot of respect from the police and a lot of respect from the people that were there protesting. And I think that's how we got through this without having any major injuries or serious injuries or any major incident.
Right, and we'll come back to the Capitol protests in a little bit, but mm-hmm. finish out your background, because then from police chief, you became sheriff?
No. There's
okay.
A lot in between there.
Thank you.
I was hired by the Dodge County Sheriff's Department as a detective in 1979. And in those days, the Sheriff's Department was separate from the patrol division. So they had the Dodge County Motor Police and the Dodge County Sheriff's Department. And basically, the sheriff was in charge of the investigators, the jail, and the civil process. And then in 1982, those two departments were merged together, like a lot of counties did at that time, for more efficiency and make it more economically feasible.
Mm-hmm.
And then I became a supervisor in the patrol division. And in 1988, I was elected sheriff of Dodge County.
Dodge County.
That's a position that I held for 14 years.
Well, so then you've seen it up close from the streets of Chicago to being the only person in a local police chief, and then you became a sheriff.
That's correct.
14 years.
Right.
And then after that?
Then after that, in 2002, I was appointed by President Bush to be the U.S. Marshal for the Western District of Wisconsin. And I held that position until 2010. So basically, I was at the Federal Building in Madison right here and was in charge of the operations of the Marshal's office here, which encompasses prisoner transports, okay, and a lot of arrests on warrants, and also working with local law enforcement agencies to try and help them catch fugitives out of the state. So, and also work with all of the other federal agencies right here in Wisconsin.
So you were the U.S. Marshal for then the Eastern District?
No, the Western District.
The Western District,
that's
excuse
correct.
Me. And yeah. You had that for 8 years?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then we President Obama was elected, so that brought in another?
That brought the change, and yes, and then in 2010 I was retired as that position.
You retired?
Yes, sir.
Now, after such a long career in law enforcement, and a love of the outdoors, what made you want to head the Wisconsin State Patrol?
You know, I've got to be very honest with you. I have always had a good relationship with the Wisconsin State Patrol. When I was a sheriff, there were a lot of issues that came up with the State Patrol, and I was always pro-State Patrol. And when I look back at it now, I think it's because I started with a large police department in Chicago. I always had, you know, looked at the structure of a large statewide organization or a large citywide organization. And the State Patrol was the closest thing in our area here that I can compare with the two. And I had stated many times that I would really be honored to be a part of the State Patrol. And it just never really availed itself. So when the opportunity did come along earlier this year, I was, you know, very interested and interviewed for the position and was given the position.
After your appointment was announced, you know, the blogosphere was out there criticizing you, saying it's a job of nepotism because your son is Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, your other son is Assembly Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald. How do you respond to those charges?
I've got to tell you that I was surprised by that.
Were you?
Yeah, because, you know, I was focusing on my career and I was focusing on the objectives that I've had over the years, and my whole life has been law enforcement. It hasn't been anything that would involve the legislature. Although you are involved to a certain respect, but the two jobs, in my estimation, were totally separate. And I was looking at an opportunity to fulfill a desire that I've had for many years and bring a different perspective to the State Patrol. Quite frankly, I talked very openly in the interview about a sheriff's perspective of the State Patrol and
right.
how I felt I could help those relationships.
Well, how do you see the mission of the State Patrol?
Well, you know, a lot of people, and over the years, a lot of people have said that, we could abolish the State Patrol and turn all of this money and all of the resources that we have over to, let's say, the sheriff's departments or to the city police departments. I think one of the biggest things that we have to offer as the State Patrol is our availability to move a large contingency of officers to a given location.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, when we move them there, they come fully equipped with their own vehicle, with all the equipment that they need, and we have a very sophisticated communication system where we can communicate statewide. This became very obvious to me as a sheriff when being the sheriff in Dodge County, you're aware that you have more prisoners than any other county in the state. You have four state prisons that are there, plus we have a large jail in Dodge County that leases space to a lot of other agencies, a lot of federal agencies.
Four prisons in one county?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Yeah. Excuse me.
Yeah. And we had and this was before I was the sheriff, but we had a disturbance at Waupun. And when I was there as a sheriff deputy with several members of our department, it was very reassuring to see the State Patrol pull up with all of these people so that they could form a perimeter around that and hold everything, and it sure made the residents a lot more at ease when they saw that. So I think that's one of the biggest our availability is one of the biggest assets that we have,
mm-hmm,
as far as the State Patrol. We have a lot of other areas in the State Patrol that we assist sheriff's departments with. Our technical reconstruction of accidents is a big Very costly unit, a lot of training, a lot of sophisticated equipment, and we offer this to all of the different police departments and sheriff's departments. Not only do we reconstruct accident scenes, but we can reconstruct crime scenes, which is a big plus too with that. We can electronically do the measurements and do the graphs and everything, so we save a lot of man hours that way, and it's a big plus to the other. And that's one of the things that I want to focus on as the superintendent, is to continue those relationships, and I see that as one of the most important parts of my job, is to work with the sheriffs and police departments and you know, show them what's available to them, and to keep our resources so we can do that.
By law, though, the mission of the State Patrol is the enforcement of highway safety, and right, isn't that,
you
still
know,
the...
and that's very true, and that's a mission that that, you know, rightfully should be our priority, and it will be our priority. Right now, I have received several communications from Sheriff asking us when are we going to have a class of new troopers, because what's happened, we haven't had a class since 2008, and okay, we are down some pretty significant numbers in our areas. And what has happened is the resident troopers, as they're referred to in a county, have to be moved to the interstate and to the other responsibilities that we have. When this unit was started, when the State Patrol was started many decades ago, our primary duty was rural enforcement, mm-hmm, in the counties. And I still see that as our mission today. Ideally, when we get up to strength, we will have the troopers back in the county, assisting the counties, assisting them with all the things that we've talked about before. But also we have the responsibility of all of the interstate and all of the major limited access highways in the state, and I see that as a primary responsibility. So basically, we are not criminal, we are traffic orientated, and I see that mission staying.
State law, as you know, sets a limit of troopers at 399.
Statutorily, right?
Yes, that's set in state
law.
Correct. How many of those are now vacant, sir?
Well, several. Okay, we have, you know, and I still have retirements, I still have other things that are happening on a weekly basis, so to give you a fixed number would be very difficult to do right now, but it is, it's significant, okay? When I first became the superintendent, we had in-service training at our academy in, mm-hmm, Toma, and in-service training is where all of the troopers, they have to do their update every year, and I went and talked to each individual class, mm-hmm, so that I could get a feel of what their concerns were, where they thought the mission should be, where they thought, you know, what should be changed and what we should look at. And I got a lot of valuable information from these people. But basically, you know, our responsibility is traffic enforcement, and they understand that, and that's what they excel in, and that's what they like to do. We're not criminal. We don't do criminal investigations, you know, and I don't see us changing that mission or even wanting to change that mission. I had one trooper ask me if I was going to work to raise the number statutorily that we could have, right, and I informed them that I'd be happy to just meet that number, because we haven't met it for years and we're not close to it right now.
Well, is the are you hiring now?
We are.
You are hiring.
Hopefully we're going to start a class. Not hopefully, we are going to start a class in October, and we hope to have 40 candidates ready to be in that class. That's our goal right now.
Okay, that tells me you're at least 40 down now from your 399.
Yeah, we're more than 40 down.
More than 40 down.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Yeah, and then, you know, on the other side, we have inspectors that are trained in the same class with the troopers,
yes,
and then they take further training afterwards so that they can do the truck enforcement, which we have many of our facilities along the highways. You know, when you enter our state, you see these big elaborate buildings where we have weigh stations, and we have truck inspection lanes that we and garages now that we can inspect the trucks year round. And again, we're short on staff there, and I think it's very important. And one of our missions is to make our highways safer, and big commercial vehicles are a big concern in that safety aspect. So we have the technology today, but you know, we have to man those 24 hours a day, and that's what our goal is.
How many
right
inspectors? Because those there's no limit set in state law on
there
the number of inspectors.
There is none now, but you know, we only have 121, and you know, that I don't know where we're at that either, because
okay,
that's been changing on a daily basis.
121.
Too. Yeah.
Well, you show up for work in your new job on February 14th, and there's already protesters in and around the Capitol. They're protesting around the governor's Wauwatosa home and the governor's official residents in Maple Bluff. How did the state patrol become the face of Capitol security?
Well, I can tell you my opinion of how we became the face of security. I stood up in the balcony of the rotunda and looked at the crowds down, and I was kind of out of the picture. People didn't recognize me. You know, I had on a stocking hat and I had a jacket on, and just observing what was going on,
right,
to give me a basis of where we were at. And the troopers were very visible, very obvious. A decision was made for them to wear their Class B uniforms, which is the uniform with the trooper hat, and not wear our SWAT gear or that, and I think, in my personally, when I look down at the crowd, I could pick the troopers out. And a lot of people have said to me since this incident that they could pick the troopers out too, you know. And I can tell you that they're very proud of their appearance. And we actually emphasize a lot of our in-service training on how to handle incidents, how to handle major snowstorms, which can shut down a major highway, how to handle flooding that can shut down several major roads at any given time, how to handle uprisings at prisons. So we didn't particularly train for an incident at the Capitol, but our basic training covers an incident like that. So when I looked at it as their new leader, I said, I'm in pretty good shape here. I've got a very visible group of people. I've got a definite organization that has pre-planned for incidents like this. And our command center, it was very obvious that we knew how to move troopers from up north down here to cover different responsibilities that we had here, but yet leave a contingency up there so that we didn't strip everybody and bring them down here, that if we had a serious incident up north, we could move people around and cover that incident.
Were you surprised at the number of protesters, both inside and outside, sir?
You know, I was. But after it started going and picked up steam, then no. I could see that, we were in for a long haul. I could see that things were going to be contentious. I could see that this was going, and that's what I told the troopers. I said, we're going to have to gear up for this, and we're going to have to be ready to sustain this for a period of time, and we were.
At any one time, how many troopers were on duty in and around the Capitol, Superintendent?
Well, in the hundreds, okay, yeah.
Or 200?
Never 200, I don't believe. I don't think we got that high, but yeah,
And they were working 12 and 18-hour shifts, weren't they?
Mostly 12-hour shifts, right. And we put a lot of them up, so that we could, get them rested and get them back in line again, too.
Well, what about the line of who made the decisions to allow the protesters to sleep overnight and to put up the signs? That wasn't your unit,
no.
Was it?
The Capitol Police, which are in charge of the Capitol security,
yes, sir.
They're part of the Department of Administration. We're part of the Department of Transportation. So, no, we were not making the calls. We were just backing up with manpower and doing what we were asked to do by the Department of Administration.
The protests, the largest protests, obviously, between mid-February and mid-March. Did you feel at any time that you were going to lose control of the Capitol, sir? Because there was that March night incident.
I can tell you that my biggest concern that I had in talking to a lot of the other people that were, evaluating the situation was that we all know that when you get a large number of people in a confined area, that all that one person has to do is, the old cliche, yell fire or whatever. You can really institute a very serious set of circumstances where people can get hurt. And we've seen this so many times. That was my main concern, especially when, the courts said that we couldn't limit access to the building, we couldn't do it. A lot of that stuff was done just for the safety of the people, because it was very concerning to a lot of us that were watching this happen, and it really was a set of circumstances that made our job a lot more difficult.
Well, on March 9, there was a attempt to the Senate had just passed the collective bargaining changes, and the social networks, tweets, and Facebook said, "Meet me at the Capitol," and it was the first time in my decades in the Capitol that the troopers seemed to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, lose control of the ground first and second floor, and they were stationed to try to maintain the third and fourth floor.
You know, we could have escalated what we did. We didn't want to escalate what we did.
Okay.
So there were times that we were very concerned. And our concern this whole time was for the safety of the people that were there.
Right.
It was not, you know, going back to my experience in Chicago, a lot of those people there were students, a lot of them were younger people. And that was really the first civil unrest that we were seeing in our country. You know, the Vietnam War was going on, and a lot of people were protesting that. I had somewhat the same feeling here, you know, that the crowd was not a real dangerous, mean crowd, but they were a lot of people that were very intent on a purpose. And sometimes when people become so intent, they lose perspective of their safety and lose perspective of what's around them, you know. And there were a lot of concerns, and the concerns were for the safety of the people, and that's what all of us had in our objective, was to make sure that nobody got seriously hurt.
I want to ask you about some court testimony that showed that after one of the outdoor protests around the Capitol, dozens of bullets were found on the ground.
Right.
Your reaction to that, sir?
It didn't surprise me, and it doesn't really concern me. You know, there's a lot of different explanations of how they could have gotten there, but the main thing was none of them were fired. There wasn't a gun that was there. Okay. It was just ammunition. So, yeah, it's concerning. You want to find out how it got there, and if you can, which, you know, was almost totally impossible. But no, it that part didn't really look to me as an escalation. It just looked at me as some circumstance that was unexplainable at the time.
Well, there's some amount of good news, isn't it? There was no major injury, certainly
right.
No loss of life.
Right.
And there was some damage to the Capitol, but it was fairly minor.
Right.
Why did we come out of this with such massive protests with none of those serious injuries or damage?
Because I think a lot of, you know, and people may misconstrue what I'm saying here, but a lot of the protesters were responsible people. You know, we had a mixture of a lot of teachers, professionals, a lot of other people there. They're not a violent crowd. They were there for a purpose, and their purpose was to, you know, bring forth their concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we understood that, you know. I mean, if you're going to quell a riot at a prison, you know what you're dealing with. There's a lot of people that have nothing to lose in a situation like that. And that's the way I equated it through my years of experience in law enforcement. And, you know, we, even when we had to take some passive resistors out of the assembly lobby and that, you know, we did it with respect. They respected us, we respected them. You know, and I think when you look back at the whole thing, we're going to find out that it worked out, you know, a bad situation worked out fairly well.
In recent weeks, the state troopers have been kind of acting like TSA agents. Have they been trained to be TSA agents with the metal?
They have, and we've trained some other agencies to do that. Now, I heard on the way into work today, which is always a good sign, that that has been eliminated now.
As of today?
As of today,
right.
Yes. And, you know, that's a good thing. The security of that building, the discussion of that, that's a whole other topic, but it's not my responsibility. I'm not involved in those talks. So.
Can you give us some cost estimate? How much of your budget was spent on that?
A whole lot.
A whole lot. Millions.
Yeah.
We're talking
millions. Yes,
here.
We're talking millions.
In overtime and housing, sir? And
Yes. And meals and all of the other things that go along with mobilizing a large group like that. We don't have all the bills yet, so I don't have a final number.
So you were in the Capitol sometimes. You were talking to your troopers. How did they respond to being on duty in the Capitol with these protesters, sir?
It was a good experience for a lot of them, okay? You know, and I explained to them at their in-service training that, you know, you've trained for this for years. You've done a lot of different things, but this was a new experience for most of them. I mean, the younger officers have never been involved in anything like this before.
Right.
Again, they got to apply their training. They got to apply, you know, a lot of things that they wouldn't have the chance to do. But also, very quickly, they became sick of it and wanted to get back and do their regular job.
You know, understand.
Because it did get monotonous after a while, and the sound in that building and everything else took a toll on all of our nerves, I think.
Right. And now they're going to be transitioning back to their regular
They are transitioning.
Regular
Most
duties.
Of them are back to their regular duties. We
right.
only have seven or eight in there now on today's roster. And that's significantly down from where we were at the height of this whole thing.
Right.
So.
One of their regular duties, I've always been impressed when some of the annual stats come out. Troopers are increasingly confiscating a lot of drugs on our highways, aren't they, sir?
Yes, they are.
Do you consider the State Patrol a drug interdiction agency?
Well, you know, that wasn't our primary goal, and it's not our primary goal. It's one of our primary goals, but I mean, traffic enforcement is still our top primary goal. But a lot of times when the troopers are stopping people, they're having evidence that there's illegal activity going on in the vehicle, or they suspect there might be illegal substance in that vehicle. We have our canine unit that is specifically
trained.
How many
dogs now?
Five.
Five?
That are specifically trained to, you know, drug interdiction. And we are finding a lot of, in commercial vehicles, a lot of large quantities of illegal substances being moved and a lot of personal vehicles. So it's kind of a sideline that is there that we can't ignore. It's not our primary, traffic is still our primary goal, but it's something that goes along with that.
Well, I was just seeing some national news stories. The war on drugs started 40 years ago. As a veteran law enforcement officer, are we winning? Are we holding our own, sir?
You know, we could sit here and debate this all morning.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of people that feel that it's a waste of time, that, you know, that drugs should be legalized, and, you know, there's two sides to every story. As somebody that's been involved in law enforcement for many years, you know, I think that we are, you know, trying to uphold what we feel is a detriment to society. And being a sheriff and working with a lot of families that have seen the perils of drug, you know, I have no problem with justifying what we're doing. And, you know, as any parent would say, you know, they recognize you can lose a child through death. You can also lose a child through drugs. And other substances that are used. So the people that want to legalize it, I think, you know, are mistaken. And I think that any effort that we do is going to make our roads safer, and that's our primary. You know, alcohol is still a drug. I don't care how you look at it. And we're still running into the high numbers of people that have multiple OWIs.
Yes.
And they're a jeopardy to everybody that's on that road with them. And, you know, it's always a tragic thing when somebody loses a life because of somebody else's.
Do you think we have fewer drunken drivers on Wisconsin highways than when you first moved to Wisconsin and became the police? No?
I wish I could say that. Well, we have more vehicles on the road, too.
Yes, sir.
We have a bigger population, so naturally those numbers are going to go up. You know, but it's still a huge concern of law enforcement is the people that are driving impaired, whether it's on drugs, whether it's on alcohol, or whether it's now our new technology with texting and other things that we're doing. You know, a lot of times that's the main problem with the accident, you know.
Having covered the Capitol for a little bit, every time there's a move to increase the number of troopers from 399, there's a lot of back and forth between the local sheriff's departments. And don't raise the numbers and don't give us broader authority. Don't give the troopers broader authority.
Right.
As a former sheriff in Dodge County, why is there sometimes this tension, sir?
Well, a lot of times it's just territory. You know, people think that we're there to take over their operation, and I can assure them they're not. And I think one of the reasons that I was picked to be the superintendent is because of my 14 years as the sheriff. And I think that this administration wants to work with the sheriffs. And I'll tell you, in tight budgets today, we can no longer duplicate services, you know, and law enforcement understands this. And law enforcement understands that, you know, with the tighter budgets, we're not going to get the tools that sometimes we need to have the duplication of services. So I see as one of the main points of my job is to work with the sheriffs and work with the police chiefs to make sure that we're not doing a duplication of services. And where we can, you know, increase what they need, it's our responsibility to do that. And I'll give you a prime example. Right after I was appointed superintendent, we had the tragic incident up in Fond du Lac where an officer lost his life in an incident. That devastated the city of Fond du Lac. And the State Patrol was able to assist in that criminal investigation with our TRU unit, our traffic enforcement or a reconstruction unit.
Mm-hmm.
And also we were able to provide troopers to patrol the city while the investigation was going on because it's a very devastating thing for the rest of the officers on that department when they lose a member. And you know, I see that as part of our mission to support other agencies when they have problems and to actually go in and patrol that area. And you know, as a superintendent, I can move 50, 60 troopers to an area that would have a tornado or have some weather incident and secure that whole area, you know, and I see that's our value. So we're not trying to take over the sheriff's responsibility. I can truthfully look the sheriffs in the eye and tell them that. And I think a lot of them feel more comfortable that they have a superintendent now that knows their side of
former
the story.
Former sheriff.
Right.
The governor and lawmakers made a decision to exempt state troopers from the collective bargaining changes. Wise decision, sir?
You know, it has caused some confusion amongst law enforcement agencies. And, you know, I understand the reason for it, but I don't, you know, I wasn't involved in any of the process. So some of the things that were just, you know, inequitable have been changed, and I hope that it'll all work out.
Okay. And just a couple more questions. Your goals for the state patrol?
You know, a lot of people ask me when I came in here, did I have an agenda? You know, I truthfully don't have an agenda. I came in here with the idea of observing how the department was run, observing, you know, how things happen here. And I've been very pleased since I've been here with the organization, the structure of the organization. There's a lot of people that have retired in the short time that I've been here, so we'll be making some very serious promotions to our command staff and to I talk to the younger troopers and tell them this is a great opportunity for advancement and a great opportunity for everybody. So I see a lot of challenges on the forefront. I see a lot of things that are in our future that we're going to have to address in the upcoming years.
Okay.
And I look forward to making some of those decisions with the command staff. And one of the things that I try to impress upon the recruits and will impress upon it in service is I value the input from everybody. And some of the most important input that I get is from the troopers that are out there doing the job every day and looking at what tools they need to do their job. And I look at it, my job is to get those resources so they can do their job.
And then my final question, put on your dad hat. Was Jeff or Scott cause more trouble growing up?
You know, neither one of them gave my wife and I any grief. And
is that
I give I give my wife
angelic children.
No. Now we're not going to get into specifics here.
But, I understand.
I'm saying nothing major. You know,
nothing major.
They were both boys. Both of them have a different personality, and both of them, as brothers, always got along.
Did they?
Yeah, they always did.
They seem to be still getting along in the Capitol.
They do. They do. And it's
how often do you talk
remarkable.
To them?
You know, not often enough.
Okay.
Their schedule is their schedule, and my schedule is my schedule. And, you know, at Father's Day, I saw Scott and his family. They came over. My wife and I were out of town for the weekend, and they were over for a half hour or so. And Jeff called me on the phone. I never even got to see him on Father's Day. So
you didn't.
No, but they have both busy schedules. And quite frankly, with the you know, a statewide organization like the State Patrol, a lot of times I'm at our academy or I'm up at one of our outposts and you know, so it's I don't see them that often.
Well, you have had a career in law enforcement. Are you surprised that your two sons got into politics?
They blame me for that.
How do they blame you?
When I ran for sheriff in 1988, Jeff was in college yet, and Scott was running a local newspaper.
Yes.
And he helped me tremendously on my campaign. And when it was all done, he said, "Dad, I really, you know, got the bug, you know." And he then ran for a Senate seat, and he won,
yeah.
You know. And he and his college buddies put together a campaign group, and, you know, I personally didn't think it was going to happen, you know, but it did happen. And then his brother was living in Chicago and moved back here. His wife wanted to move back to Wisconsin, so they moved back to Wisconsin. And he was in a job that he didn't really like. He was in a sales job. And when Bob Getch suddenly announced he was going to retire, which was a surprise to everybody, Jeff called me and said, "Dad, I'm going to run for Bob Getch's position." I said, "Jeff, I don't know if Dodge County's ready for three people on the same ballot." But he said, "Well, then, you know, don't you think I should?" I said, "No, I'm not going to tell you not to do it. You know, it's your decision." And he did, and he was elected, too. So I'm very proud of him. Their mother deserves a lot of credit for where they are today. She's you know, work behind the scenes and has told them one thing that she's always said is you can always be what you want to be, you know, and she's stuck by that. So,
have either of them asked you whether they should run for the U.S. Senate seat now that Senator Cole is retiring? Their names have been dropped with it.
Yes, they have.
And you've advised them?
They asked me.
And
I tell them, be what you want to be.
Be what you want to be.
Yeah, do what you want to do.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, it would be a huge step, but I don't know.
I understand.
I yeah.
Well, in sum, then, you're a career law enforcement officer who had a chance to run the state's the state patrol, and plan to be doing it then for a while.
I'm proud to be here, very proud to be here, and looking forward to leading the men and women of this fine organization for a period to come.
State Patrol Superintendent Stephen Fitzgerald, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
I appreciate it. Okay. Thank you.